Last year I preached to you a homily, you may recall, where I preached, Stop Stealing Paperclips. Remember that? If you cannot be trusted with small things, you cannot be trusted. No servant can serve two masters, Jesus says. He will either hate one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and mammon. Mammon, great word. It's an Aramaic word. It means property or money or possessions. There's another translation of that word that means mammon is that in which one puts trust. You know as well as I do that we will spend most of our lives struggling with the master mammon. It's been called mammon disease. And we will each say to ourselves that, no, I'm not mastered by money. I'm stronger than that. Nevertheless, we will still experience jealousy of someone else's money, their car, their position, their clothes, or their house. And still, we will tell ourselves that we are free from that slavery to mammon. However, in our heart of hearts, we will know that that's simply not true. To be honest, it is a struggle to be free from the master mammon, from mammon disease. And this struggle cannot be overcome without prayer and fasting and almsgiving and God's grace. One of the most misquoted sayings of St. Paul goes like this. Money is the root of all evil. Have you heard that one? It's wrong. Paul never said that. That's a misquote. This is what Paul really said. For the love of money is the root of all evils. And some people, in their desire for it, have strayed from the faith, Paul says. Money itself is neither evil nor good. Enjoyment of nice things is not evil. However, a disordered love of money and wealth and possessions leads to evil and is the root of evil, as Paul says. And as we've discussed when we spoke about the seven deadly sins and the deadly sin of greed, love of money can distort us spiritually. To the point that we run after money, we become numb in our relationships, we can drift in our ethical concern for others and our daily activities and relationships. This is the road to corruption. In that first reading, the prophet Amos reveals God's contempt for corrupt merchants in the marketplace. These are the people who will shrink the weights and measures in their favor. Amos is talking about cheating. God tells us through his prophet Amos, the Lord has sworn by the pride of Jacob, never will I forget a thing they have done. God keeps score. Our struggle with deadly sin seems to never end, and God will not forget our transgressions. Jesus teaches us to have a preferential treatment for the poor, to give alms. We're asked to redirect our love of mammon and wealth to care for those around us who are in need. That's a very important part of being Christian. And here you can sense the struggle. It's a spiritual struggle. It's a tension we all have inside of us And when you sense that tension, that's when you know you have to pray and fast and give alms, because that's the escape. That's where you build that muscle up to be stronger. There's a ministry here in Austin called Mobile Loaves and Fishes. How many of you are familiar with Mobile Loaves and Fishes? Raise your hand. You know about that one? Okay, good. It consists of volunteers, and they, instead of running a food pantry or a soup kitchen, these volunteers actually drive meals to the poor and homeless on the streets using trucks, Mobile Loaves and Fishes trucks that go from their commissaries. And the ministry began with some people who had experienced Christ Renews His Parish at St. John Newman Parish in West Austin while I was deacon there. Today, some 17,000 volunteers from various parishes and churches cooperate in teams to feed the homeless of Austin every day of the year. One of my favorite experiences with them is what has now become a tradition in the Mobile Loaves and Fishes community, which is to go out with the truck on Christmas morning, walking right past the Christmas tree and the gifts without opening them, children, family, everybody going with the trucks and taking hot chocolate and donuts and sandwiches and coffee to the homeless on Christmas morning, and only afterwards going home to their own Christmas. There's a debate within the Mobile Loaves and Fishes community over who benefits more, the hungry homeless or the volunteers who may never have known a homeless person if they hadn't gone out on the street. Several years ago, Mobile Loaves and Fishes began providing street retreats for their volunteers. It's kind of like an asphalt camping trip, if you can imagine. They consist of, let's say 15 adults, men and women sometimes, that actually camp out on the streets for 2 to 3 days along with the homeless. I went out on the very first one of the street retreats over a decade ago. The requirement is you take no cell phones, no credit cards, no money, you can't drive. You can only take what you can carry. You sleep and eat on the streets with the homeless. You become homeless. And the lessons were huge. Now, each of us started out the experience with our normal levels of misconceptions about the homeless and street beggars. And you all know the stories. Like, for instance, the line that beggars on the street corners are actually lazy, well-to-do people who arrive at their begging spots in nice cars like Cadillacs and actually live very well. Well, that's a myth. And the very first thing you lose is your myth. You lose your error. It's humbling. The myths about the homeless simply aren't true. Each person on the streets has a different story, a sad, tragic, often hopeless story. Some have skills and jobs during the day, but don't have homes or automobiles for one reason or another. There is no single cause. Few of them actually want to be there. Some do. Most do not want to be there. All of them need help. One of the homeless who took special care of the women on our retreat, about half of our people were women, was a transvestite who had undergone a sex change from man to woman, but could only afford the surgery, but not the hair removal, the depilation. Laura was an angel, a guardian angel, but Laura was ugly. Laura was large enough to be a very hairy football linebacker. And he or she was living on the streets, to be able to finish a master's degree in chemistry at the University of Texas. Laura has since died on the street due to a lack of medical care. Those of us who went out on the street retreat with mobile loaves and fishes experienced life-changing emotional moments. Among us were a school principal, principal of one of the leading Catholic schools in Austin, a lawyer, several business people, all of us successful in our private lives. Many of us, including me, were so affected that we could not talk unemotionally about these experiences until weeks had passed. All of us had been changed forever, stripped of the myths we use to keep us from coming face to face with the poor. And today, the Diocese of Austin requires a street retreat during the formation of every candidate who is in formation to become a permanent deacon. It was a wise move to move these men from an academic orientation to an orientation of the heart. Those on retreat spend time meeting for weeks before and after the retreat. We met first to prepare ourselves as best we could, think through what were the challenges we were going to encounter, and to help us afterwards process the experiences. What happened to us? In one meeting, we were sharing how difficult it was for us to drive through the parts of town where we had spent time with the homeless. Some kept in contact with friends made on the street for some time afterwards and shared updates on our new friends that they had made when they were on the streets. And we all shared the difficulties that we were encountering, like, for instance, passing a beggar at an intersection here in town. The myths didn't work for us anymore. We knew the stories. So one of our group shared that his wife had been challenging him. She had not been on the retreat. And, you know, she's needling him. And she says, "Do you give the beggar when you stop at the street corner your biggest bill or your smallest bill in your pocket?" Her point was, what do you want God to bless? The beggar or you? What do you want God to bless? The biggest bill in your pocket or the smallest bill in your pocket? He said it had become very expensive for him now to drive across Austin, and he has to carry several $20 bills to drive across Austin now, and he's trying to not carry bills larger than $20. And I got to admit to you that it's expensive for me now to drive across Austin. The mist is gone. The poor I can now see. The gospel today tells us to examine our relationship with money and wealth, whether large or small, and our generosity or lack of generosity. Jesus' gospel has affected many in Christian history, such as St. Anthony of the Desert, St. Benedict, St. Francis of Assisi, St. Teresa of Calcutta, and many other great saints for whom poverty was a very important part of their spirituality. Jesus says to us, "I tell you, make friends for yourselves with dishonest wealth, so that when it fails, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings." The person who is trustworthy in very small matters is also trustworthy in great ones. And the person who's dishonest in very small matters is also dishonest with great ones. If, therefore, you are not trustworthy with dishonest wealth, says Jesus, Who will trust you with true wealth? You cannot serve both God and mammon.